sports are going to be able to compete. But if you can use it to help humans instead of replace them, that's great. Yeah. There we are.
For the whereas is just added exemplars of the category, and then just added all the one.
Okay.
So you can, if you want, emphasize these,
or you can ask those.
Whatever you
say. Okay, good.
Yes.
That was it, right?
Yeah, but I have other formats, not for you, but just, you know, for general consumption.
It'll be determined over time. It'll be enough this resolution. Russia wants funding these proposals, they'll do that. Here's some things
Hey, where are you?
I'm good.
How are you? Can I sit here?
Sorry, no.
Hey, how are you?
Seems to be going around.
Good. Yeah.
Good.
Are you?
Sick.
Good.
Tired.
No, just that time of the year, which is stuff is due at the end of this month. Sorry.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
I have to write
the one
I have to research, write,
or will that be the
present a paper that is up?
So, for example, resolution 8, I think, is what they said far. So, having that like up on
it's
the
just
screen,
the
or having the one slide,
I say it's in publishable bar. It's up for me.
They have to say it's
then the slide will do it.
And fried rice should be
very good.
So the radma, the vegetables, it's kind of very synthetic zombies. I don't know what that is. Vegetarian, a check.
Yeah, that's the last one.
So all the
dishes.
Oh, yeah, in terms of vegan food, I did my best to make sure that there was still vegan options.
The message here for one more hour, man.
That's right.
Dude, whatever you want.
Yeah, really, like, you know.
Yeah, but I'm
trying to get my parents. Well,
in terms of me, but I think
it
is. It's like, it's a
time.
They're just not in there yet. That's three, right?
They got the money.
Awesome.
But it's everyone else. But you're one question.
Right.
Any other
or
the extra labor.
But then are
not
time to get started. All right, welcome back, everyone. I see some people still getting food. Please continue to get food. I just know we have a big meeting today, and so we will kick it off in the interests of time. Jessica, would you like to call the roll?
Layla Alshama, Jana Azair, Bijwa Barua, Nicholas Brennan,
present.
B. Candelaria, Ana Fernandez Cardenas, Paul Caruso,
here.
Cameron Chapel?
Here.
Jason Jaburko?
Present.
Alessandra Kogan?
Present.
Isako Di Tomasi?
Present.
Kelly Ellis?
Present.
Thank you. Devin Freeman?
Present.
Thank you. Emma Rose Gallen? Andy Garcia Ortiz,
present.
Irene Gattini, Malta Hassler,
present.
Mackinell James, Yusuf Khalid,
yeah.
Thank you. Claire King, Anurag Poyata,
yeah.
Song Yan Lu?
Present.
Xander Lynch?
Present.
Clarice Meffert?
Yes, I'm.
Tian Nguyen?
Present.
Thank you. Marilise Ortiz? Reina Cruz?
Present.
Katie Rohrbach? Sean Seth?
Present.
Ian Smith?
Here.
Yuping Wu?
Present.
We have 20, you have four of them.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. Welcome back, everyone. Today we have a pretty exciting meeting with five bills being laid on the table for the Assembly's consideration. All of these are pertaining to the recommendations of the Special Grants Committee, which we will go through one by one. Just a heads up, I do not anticipate we will get through everything today, but we'll at least start some of them. And hopefully pass it. We have one presentation today from Julie Edwards at Cornell Health, and we'll do a report to get into that. With that, Anna's not here for the executive committee. I'll move over to Xander with operations and staffing for your update.
All right, perfect. So in addition to a packed legislative situation, well, it's not on here. We also have openings for two positions today, which are the ones that have been advertised previously. So we're still looking for a chair of our Diversity and International Students Committee, DISC for short. And then we are also looking for a new FC chair because, unfortunately, Anurag has decided he wants to graduate. We are looking for both those positions, and I think we'll do that before legislation. Okay. Oh, that's why I couldn't find it, because it wasn't in its normal plan. Yeah. So we're going to be doing that today. Otherwise, if you're a new member, because we have a couple, please get in touch with me, or I will get in touch with you about placement on committees. So if you are a voting member of the assembly, you are also automatically required to be a member of one of our subcommittees. Otherwise, that's it.
Thank you. Any questions for Xander in operations? Seeing none, we'll move over to appropriations team.
Yeah, a minor update that resolution 2 we passed last semester to the money to animal sports restore has made their account
$1,500 for this. Thank you, Steve. Any questions for appropriation? Seeing none, we'll move over to Communication Committee. Andy?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Moving to Student Advocacy Committee, I believe Irene is not present today. So we'll kick it over to Paul with programming reports.
Yeah, so the gala is going to happen. Updates are, thanks to Andy, the first little blip of the flyer went out in the communique, which was designed mostly by Annifer. So she's not here, but thank you to her for her great design. She's on the board. Yeah, just a little reminder that it is taking place in Barton Hall on April 19th at 7 p.m., which is earlier both in time of year and time of day than last year. And we are going to announce very soon the days for ticket drops. The first will happen in late February and the next in about mid-March. So please keep an eye out for that. I'll be very loud at that point. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions for programming? Seeing none, we'll move over to the Finance Commission. Anu?
If anyone has any questions about the role I'm just in running, I encourage you to run and ask me questions afterwards. I need someone to replace me in the role. Yeah, it's been a fun time at UMC Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Anu? Seeing none, we'll move over to Faculty Advising, Teaching, and Mentorship Award Committee. Jason?
No updates.
Thank you, Jason. This time we'll move over to Graduate School.
Hello, very good to see everyone. I was sorry I could not be here 2 weeks ago, I guess. Anyway, so welcome back from break. It seems like that was a long time ago. But a couple of things. I hope some of you were able to attend some of the events of the Pathways to Success workshop last week. I got to be there for the keynote speaker on Thursday. She was great with a talk on why you, on giving, making the pitch for yourself in various kinds of hiring or job search situations. Obviously a lot is happening right now with admissions. And one of the things we're really working on this year, thanks to the leadership of Anitra, is attending to recruitment events developed virtually because we realize not everyone can visit campus. And even when people can, it's not all at the same time. But really highlighting that being a graduate student at Cornell goes beyond simply what happens in your program or field, but also very much the broader graduate student community and the resources and opportunities there. So I'm excited about that work. I think that's very important. And we're obviously paying a lot of attention to admissions, and that's a big thing going on right now. I'm also looking forward to the conversation about the Big Red Barn and continuing the work there.
Any questions for the graduate school? Katie?
Yeah, hi. So I had a question about the Office of International Learning. I know several students from my area in biological sciences, particularly international students, have expressed frustration and worry about the capacity of the international office, particularly with visa renewals. So I'm curious what the graduate school is doing to rectify that situation, especially given like just next year, like with increasing amounts of student admittance again.
To date, we have not. So the graduate school plays a key role in processing some of the visas for graduate students, but then a lot of the support for international students and even part of the visas fall under a different office with which we work very closely. To date, my sense is that we haven't, as far as I know, we have been doing pretty well on capacity. By as far as I know means I haven't been hearing of significant delays from our end on that. I will say one of the things we've really prioritized is communicating as soon as possible with admitted students about the importance of getting the process going, in that given some of the other events going on, the possible delays, even in key areas, are a major concern for us. I will also just kind of in that context, one of the things I would really note is we haven't, the word of processing immigrant visas in a large number of countries, we were initially concerned would affect student visas as well, but it is not including F1s and J1s, which is what the majority of our students come out. But if you're hearing specific concerns, I'd be glad to hear those.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah.
Any other questions for the graduate school? All right. If I could ask on Zoom, is Irene on to give the update from Student Advocacy Committee?
So sorry I can't be there in person. I'm juggling multiple things at once, especially with the MLK commemorative lecture that's happening today. But I would just simply say that Student Advocacy Committee is still trying to secure a time for our town halls, but it is going to, as far as I'm concerned, going to be at the barn. So we have a location down. And that's all the update I have.
Right, thank you, Irene. Are there any questions for Student Advocacy Committee? All right, seeing none, at this time, we'll move over to... Okay, we have our first presentation for today from Cornell Health. Is Julie here at this time? Okay, we'll come back to that. Seeing that, we'll move over to appointments and nominations. First, for the Finance Commission Chair. Their motion to open floor for nominations for the role of Finance Commission Chair. I'm also happy to yield the honor to speak on what this role is.
I motion for Nick to yield to Anu so that Anu can speak.
Anu, would you like to be heard?
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the FC chair does two things primarily throughout the year. One is of the roughly 1 million to 1.1 million that comes into seeing, about $500,000 of that gets shuttled to the FC chair and help the external organizations. We have roughly 300 clubs operating in a given year for grad students in Sacramento, and they all get somewhere between $300,000 to $5,000. Some of you a bit more. And so over the summer, the main job is making sure that those clubs all get funding. Throughout the year, new clubs are formed, making sure that they get funds. That's job one. Job two is working with clubs for ad hoc or one-off expenses. There's many clubs that decide to host one-off events that they didn't work the prior summer. So they work with them for working out additional funding for that. Beyond this, the FC guidelines. Those dictate what clubs can spend money on. Things like how much things on alcohol, so on and so forth. Those would need to be updated as well. And overall, you'd be working quite closely with CIM. So a lot of the FC and appropriations committees that has happened in concerts, they share largely all of their members. So if you don't like CIM, they don't run for it. Overall, it should be a fun gig. And then you get paid like $500 per semester. So
$1,500
for the year.
Thank you, Anu. I'll also note that you do not need to be a sitting GPSA member to run for this talk. Are there any questions for Anu about the requirements of the role or responsibilities? Austin.
Where did you come from?
I was FC chair for the last 2 years.
Okay.
Nick. Before this term, I was in the same position.
Oh, any other questions for Anu?
Our members of last question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you person be taking over, would it be after grad?
So every exec position in DDKSA runs from like April, May to April, May. Besides the FC chair, that one's placed in like Jan, Feb. So this would run from this coming meeting up until next February. So that way, me and whoever the next chair have like 1 or 2 months to make sure you understand everything going into summer, is when the bulk of the work will be happening, reallocating funds to organizations.
Any other questions for Anu? Seeing none, I'll repeat. Any motions to open the floor for the Finance Commission Chair position? Then just recognize.
Like a motion to open the floor.
There a second?
I'll second.
Second by Jason. Seeing no objection, floor is now open for nomination for the role of Finance Commission Chair. Are there any nominations for this?
Point of information,
yes.
People are allowed to self-nominate.
That's correct.
Just for anyone who's
any nominations for the role of Finance Commission Chair? Paul.
Alessandra Kugel.
Alessandra, do you accept this nomination?
Do not.
Sorry. Last call. Are there any nominations for role of Finance Commission Chair? Sanders recognized.
It's close the floor.
Motion to close the floor. Do I have a second?
No,
second. Second from Jason. Without objection, floor is closed. And I move on to the Diversity and International Student Committee Chair position. We briefed on the role of this committee last time, but I can briefly explain. This would be the committee on the GPSA that serves to advance the interests of international students at Cornell, including from programming events, including their Thanksgiving celebration, in addition to facilitating surveys that collect information about different communities on campus and reporting that work with the executive board and the larger graduate student community. Are there any motions to open the floor for Diversity and International Student Committee Chair?
The point of information.
Yes. Sanders recommend.
Do you get do you get to vote and that $5,500 if you're elected to this position?
Yes. A motion to open the floor for all this
record. Motion to open the floor. All right.
Second from Xander. At this time, are there any nominations for the role of Diversity and International Student Committee Chair? Going once. All is recognized.
Motion to close the floor.
Open the motion to close the floor. Do I have a second? A second from Jason. Without objection, floor is now closed and we'll move on to the agenda. This time is Julie Edwards present.
Nick, when I was looking back through the emails, she might be planning on getting here at 5:30.
All right. So we'll just have to move ahead then. Oh. Perfect. All right.
That was my career as a doorman.
That's perfect timing. Then at this time, I'm pleased to welcome Julie Edwards, Assistant Vice President for Student Health and Wellbeing, joined by Dr. Jada Hampton, Community Director for Clinical Operations, and Dr. Wendy Marone, Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Cornell Health. Welcome to the GPSA. And I think Jessica will be pulling up your slides. And please, you have the floor.
Thank you. Do you want to control them yourself or do you want me to? Do you want us to use audio? You have audio up here? Just so
they're have it in the ceiling.
Yeah. Oh, okay, perfect. They have audio in the ceiling. So folks can hear. All right. So you can like they have it you can
Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Jada Hamilton. So we're gonna go ahead and just provide a nice overview of Cornell Health, including sort of our mission visions and services we provide outside of what you think about counseling and medical services. So first I'd like to just go over our vision and mission. I think that's important to sort of lay the groundwork and to ground everybody as far as what we at Cornell Health feel like we would like to do and be a part of our health and well-being for the entire campus. So we'll start with our vision. So Cornell Health's vision is to cultivate a flourishing campus community in which every student has access to essential services and resources. Health inequities are deployed. Health inequities are identified and actively addressed, and well-being is a fundamental priority for the entire community. Our mission is to foster a collaborative and inclusive environment that provides students with access to high-quality care, evidence-informed services, and innovative initiatives. We create a culture of compassion, belonging, and continuous learning, empowering students with knowledge, skills, and resources to navigate their health and well-being and pursue their optimal potential. Sounds pretty good, right? Hey, all right, Chris. Excellent. Okay, so as you can see, we have a lot going on in Cornell Health, and like I said, kind of outside of including sort of counseling psychological services, but this graphic just describes sort of what we're all about. Of course, with Cornell Health in the center, we provide a host of administrative services that basically support the mission and vision of Cornell Health. Of course, we have our counseling and psychological services that includes therapy, counseling, groups, et cetera, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit. Our primary care services, that's where, you know, you can come in if you're sick, injury. We have some specialty kind of services like eating disorder care, gender services, AOD services, or alcohol and other drugs, and a variety of other things. We also have our Swarton Center for Health Initiatives, which I can't see the bottom because I'm talking.
Yeah.
which does a lot of our sort of health promotion type activities and a lot of other great services and sort of resources for students. Our Student Disability Services, or SDS, provides students with help with accessibility. So anything that's a barrier to their learning, they'll help students navigate that. Strategic planning and analysis. So data, like how do we know how we're doing? How do we know what our students need and things like that? So sort of a broad range of things that we provide. And this is what we'll focus on in the yellow. Okay, so this is a lovely picture of our relatively newish building addition. We are located at Hope Plaza. Does anybody know where Hope, like the corner? Okay, yeah, I've been there, just location. And we're open Monday through Friday, with limited services in the evenings and Saturdays. So we have Saturday clinic availability during the semester, and mainly for acute sort of immediate need types of things, and then some limited telehealth services in the evening. And available by phone, we do have a 24/7 on-call service where you get connected with a provider who can, you know, triage you based on what's going on. Sometimes it's if you need to go to the emergency room, or this can wait till tomorrow and you can talk with your primary care provider. Okay, so sort of what I described earlier, primary care, we do a lot of stuff. So it includes illnesses and injuries. So if you cut your finger, sprain your ankle, that kind of thing, we're definitely here for that and a bunch of other things. Non-urgent health concerns like preventive visits, you know, other sort of chronic care management, thyroid issue, anybody, thyroid medicine, medications and lab follow-up, et cetera, but there's, you know, wide variety of things. Medication management, prescriptions, of course. We even do mental health medications. So we evaluate students and treat them for things ranging from anxiety and depression to ADHD care and management, among other, you know, infection care, et cetera. Like I said, chronic health conditions, sexual health, of course, we have a robust process for evaluating, treating, either and screening for sexual health concerns. We have a nice team of nutritionists and dietitians who help with eating concerns, even if you don't have a concern as far as a diagnosis, an eating disorder. I'm a vegetarian. How do I get more protein in my diet, et cetera? Physical therapy is also part of our medical department and primary care services right on site within Cornell Health at this time. We do have a lab that's contracted out. It's called LabCorp, so it's not part of Cornell Health. Is actually part of our building, and we do have on-site x-rays. Again, gender affirming care. If there's something that's beyond the scope of what we provide at Cornell Health, we have great relationships with our providers, and we do referrals and care coordination as needed. Okay. Any questions?
No? Okay, I can go here. Hi, everybody. My name is Wendy Midone, pronounced she, her, Aya, and I'm the director of Cornell Health CAPS, Counseling and Psychological Services. We're a team of about 35, 36, we just had some, we're always growing, and we are made up of licensed clinicians, mental health therapists, social workers that really specialize in a wide array of eclectic modalities to make sure that we're meeting all of your needs. We have a range of services, so you can access our workshops, which are available online, and you can take them at your own pace. We also have group counseling and a variety of topics, and you can find them on our website. We're just putting together the workshops for the semester, so you're all welcome. You know, to look at them. We have range from, you know, managing stress to dealing with maybe anxiety, and it's really tailored based on your needs. You know, we look at the kind of the needs and the kind of the primary concerns that students thought were services the prior semester, and then that's how we've been tailoring our group counseling. We also have tools. So the first way that you can get connected to us is scheduling an appointment, and you would meet with someone that would assess your needs and really determine whether you are a good fit for our services. You know, we're a short, brief intervention, but we don't have a limited number of sessions. Or if you're looking for individual therapy, long-term therapy, the person would be able to connect you to many other providers and also provide you other referrals. You know, maybe you're interested, like Jada said, maybe you're interested in nutrition. Well, that's something that I'll connect you to. Or we also have some more specialized services. And then our individual counseling, we have single sessions. So there might be that you're going through the semester, you're really stressed because, as you know, you all know, you know, there's times of the semester that you might, all your best coping skills might not be working. So you can reach out and have a single session, or you might be wanting to seek services for something more long-term or really addressing, you know, maybe grief, maybe other, you know, challenges that you might be experiencing. So we do have individualized counseling. And we also have urgent care interventions and same day services, which is more if you feel that you're experiencing a crisis, not 911 related that you are wanting to end your life, but maybe you're just having a, you know, you woke up and you're having a panic attack and you are not sure, you know, kind of like how to manage it. You can reach out and we have same day appointments. And then at that point, we can also determine if maybe you need a higher level of care, maybe you need to go to the hospital, so we can support with that. And then we also have campus and local resources and support here and also at Cornell Tech. We have embedded therapists at some of the locations, and you can access them. And again, when you reach out to our, they're called access providers, they will be able to identify maybe, you know, Cornell Health is too far from where you're located. Maybe there's an embedded therapist that might be more accessible to your, you know, when you're taking your classes. And then we also have community liaisons also tied to some specific identities. So you might feel that you want additional support. So that's a very brief overview, but you can find all our resources online. And again, the access provider can really talk through what is it that meets your needs at this moment, whether it's meeting with us or also just being connected to a therapist. You know, our goal is really to make sure that you have the resources needed. So it doesn't mean that you have to come to us. We could also connect you if that seems like a better fit. But I hope that if you are feeling like you want to talk to somebody, you know that you know, we're available for all of you.
Okay. And Wendy alluded to this, but one of the things that we recognized, and you all may have seen, that we received a very large gift from the Cerielli family. So with that $20 million, it was specific to expand our community-based services. So what that funding is doing, it's actually allowing us to expand our well-being coaching program, as well as bringing on 7 additional embedded therapists. So we had some embedded therapists. There was one in CDM. There was also one in athletics. And as Wendy mentioned, also one at Cornell Tech. And so the gift is actually to fund embedded therapists to be housed in academic buildings. So right now we have one person who's in MBR. We have one person in Ives Hall and one in Rhodes Hall. And those are the 3 that started this fall. So we're really trying to identify geographic location. And the beauty about embedded therapists is that their goal is to also really become accustomed to learning more about the culture of whichever college or school they're supporting. So they can actually attend staff meetings and faculty meetings to better understand anecdotally as well as data that they might have. So they can tailor different workshops that Wendy already mentioned, or maybe host a Let's Talk session. So it's more informal where someone can just connect with them. But it's another touch point because we recognize that while we have a beautiful building, that we have many amazing resources within it, sometimes it's hard to get there, depending on where you are across campus. And so that's why we are really trying to expand the community-based service offerings. For those who don't know about well-being coaching, These are actually full-time staff members who are serving as coaches, not within Cornell Health. They actually are folks across campus that are giving 2 hours a week of their time to serve as a coach. And they've been trained in motivational interviewing. They're able to connect with folks so that you can fill out the interest form and say, hey, I'm focused, I already need focus on procrastination or time management with completing my dissertation. So we've actually had a lot of graduate and professional students who have actually sought coaching services. And I would highly encourage it because it's a great way to build a connection. And they are not telling you what to do. They're helping you develop with your, use your strengths to kind of move towards goals that you create for yourself. So it's just another great resource with our clinical care. And Wendy already talked about the liaisons. Those are primarily housed in Cornell Health, but they go out a lot into the community and the different identity centers. And then Let's Talk, if you have not heard about that, that is really an anonymous way that we have counselors in different areas across campus. You can look on our website to see where and what times, and you can just pop in if you want to talk about, I don't know how good I got with the break, but and you can talk about, you know, just different concerns that you may have. And sometimes it leads to getting an access appointment, and then maybe you get some ongoing counseling support. Other times it might just be that you needed a trusted adult to talk to. So either way, there's no wrong door. And that's one of the things that we really value, is that we want to be able to provide a wide array of services so there is a good web of support that you all have access to. Oh, student disability services. So for folks who are unaware of our student disability services office, they are on the fifth floor within the Cornell Health building, and they work really closely with students who need formal accommodations. They can also help with supporting students and having conversations sometimes with faculty members. It really depends. So they work with the campus partners. They identify a lot of the time different spaces that maybe are not inclusive. Sometimes maybe we have someone who's on crutches, and so it's going to be a barrier to them in certain spaces across campus, or someone who's in a wheelchair, or someone who has limited vision, and so they need various things. So student disability services really works to try and create different avenues to have not only the environment be inclusive, but also working with students who need those formal accommodations. And as Jada had mentioned earlier, I'm sorry, Dr. Hamilton mentioned earlier, with the Swarton Center for Health Initiatives, I really view this group as the public health arm of Cornell Health. So they really look at all of our data. They identify what is the data telling us, where are some gaps, and how do we go out there to provide resources, services, or support in general. So they will provide different educational opportunities. They'll provide targeted interventions. They also will look at the data that we have to really share that more so with the community. So we're bringing folks together, for instance. They did it a lot during COVID, really looking at some of that data, but we also do it around alcohol and other drugs, hazing, sexual violence prevention. So a lot of different components where we're thinking critically about those aspects and how we can support students more holistically. And what I like to say is it's more upstream. So we're trying to identify what things might be happening or the ways in which we can create well-being in different spaces. So maybe it doesn't get to a crisis situation down the line. So how can we think about it from a broad scope and really provide things across a continuum of care? Yeah. Oh, and then our other resources. So I mentioned alcohol and other drug services. Dr. Hamilton mentioned we support students with disordered eating. We have victim advocacy or within the SHARE office, and that's affiliated with that Swarton Center. So they can be one-on-one for folks who have experienced bias or sexual assault or sexual violence. We have patient advocates. So if you come in and for some reason you did not like the care that you received, please know that you can reach out to a patient advocate. We serve as patient advocates. We have other folks within our teams. So we want to be able to understand what went well and where are there opportunities that we can improve. We also have translation and interpretation services. This is a picture of our wonderful pharmacy. So you can come for over-the-counter medication. You can also have your medication transferred here. And we also, in our lobby, which is open 24/7, we have a self-care vending machine. So you can get access to a lot of various things, even COVID tests, which I think are still in there. As it turned out, yes, they're now $10, not free anymore, but yes, So you can still get those as well as Plan B and other things like that in those self-care vending machines. And all students, this always surprises me because a lot of the times I'll present at the beginning of the year. I just want to stress, anyone can come to Cornell Health if you are a registered student. For some reason, people are like, I don't know if I have the right insurance or can I come? Anyone can because you all pay a health fee to be here. And so I always suggest starting with us. Get established with us as a patient or a client so that you can connect with us. You can communicate with providers on the portal. It's just a nice way to really have care here on campus. And what we do is we actually bill insurance plans as a primary payer for both medical and psychiatric visits. And then the remaining costs we try to subsidize. So there's a $10 copay for most other visits, although some are free. So I just wanted you all to know about the different costs associated and how to access various services. And the ones that have no cost are preventative medical visits, the Let's Talk consultations that are across campus, group counseling trainings and workshops. If lab tests are done by our staff on the floors, there is not a cost. But if someone goes to LabCorp, which is on, it's a contracted service on the second floor, you will have a cost, whatever they'll bill your insurance for. There's no cost for COVID and flu vaccines. And then anything that there's a remaining cost, if your insurance is billed, whatever that remaining cost, students are responsible for that piece. So just wanted to stress that as well. And our pharmacy is in network. It's in network with many different providers. Yeah. And we actually within everyone or most in Cornell Health, I shouldn't say everyone yet, but we are in the process of becoming a Medicaid provider as well. So that's another, because we recognize that that's a need. The challenge with New York State is that our pharmacy cannot be designated as such because we only serve the campus community. So we would have to be open to everyone within Tompkins County, but we're trying to work on that legislation as well. So just so that you all know, but providers, we're moving in the direction so that we also are covered under Medicaid. And then lastly, what I wanted to just focus on before we can open it up for questions, for folks who are not aware, we actually adopted the Okanagan Charter in October of 2022. And as such, this is really showing Cornell's commitment to be a health promoting campus. And these are some of the guiding principles. It's really, how do we think about well-being for people, place, and planet? So how are we thinking about the interconnectedness of these aspects? How can we take a whole systems approach, knowing that not everything to keep you all well resides in Cornell Health? We have to work with faculty. We have to really think about the spaces, even housing across the city and the county, you know, just things like that in general, that we really try to think critically about ways that we can support well-being holistically. And so this just shares a part of that. You can just go to the next slide. Yeah. And our vision for future is what we would like to do, becoming health promoting, is we want everyone to see the role that they play in supporting well-being. So that what we're trying to do is create these spaces where folks can feel supported, they can connect with one another, feel a sense of belonging across campus. We want to use our data. So Dr. Hamilton mentioned the strategic planning piece and the data. We actually use that data to inform our work. And so there will be surveys that we send out every May, and that really helps drive the action. So as an example, we know that belonging is a protective factor for distress, and it actually helps with students feeling a sense of belonging, they're higher on our flourishing measures. We also want to make sure that we're fostering inclusive partnerships and participation, and that we're documenting progress, because maybe we tried an intervention and it didn't work, or maybe we went one path and we need to pivot because the data isn't showing that we've really reached the outcomes that we had hoped. So those are some of the things that we're really thinking about. But as I mentioned, this whole initiative is around well-being for people, place, and planet. And that's it. So we're going to open it up, see what else questions you all have. And I don't know how much more time we have. So.
Mentioned, Vicki, your talk, your presentation reminded me that for the medical primary care piece, even when you go on your portal and you're looking for appointments, if you don't see anything that you need, especially if it's like an acute thing, just give us a call. I know students don't like calling no more, but give us a call, talk to one of our triage nurses, and we have access, you know, we have capacity for same day.
type of point. So just keep that in the back of your mind or tell the brand or something.
Any questions for Julie Edwards, Dr. Hamilton, or Dr. Merrill?
Thank you guys for being here. This was a really great presentation. Are you able to share very broad and general information on vaccination rates, specifically COVID and flu, out of Cornell Health? And if those rates have gone down recently or gone up?
You mean, is the number of people vaccinated?
Right. Mm. Or actually, specifically, people getting the vaccines?
Oh, yes. As far as trends, because we do outsource some of those things now, so we have some clinics that are across campus and things. We could get that though and share it with you all.
Right.
I don't have that at the top of my
But just but you're aware.
That's a great question.
So usually starting like fall, when you know flu vaccine is out, in primary care, with every visit, we always offer students the vaccine. Whether or not they take it is great. We've seen something like now that flu's at the height, has more students kind of requesting it. It takes 2 weeks to start that, but it's fine. But COVID, I don't think we've seen less COVID uptake as far as vaccinations, but
with the more recent, right?
I'm interested just because we see a national trend of some vaccine uptake going down. So I'm just wondering if maybe there's something to observe it for.
Sure, no, that's really helpful. Yeah, what we could do is to kind of take a look and we can share it after.
Other questions?
Yeah, maybe I'm not familiar with what U.S. healthcare looks like, but previously I want to make an appointment at Cornell Health. People might notice that you might need to wait extra 2 weeks to really get an appointment. And then when I was there, I feel very weird. Is I will sit in the room and wait for maybe 30 minutes. I will see the first, maybe that is doctor or someone else, and maybe should take care of my blood pressure or something like that. And then after I need to wait another 20 minutes, and then I will see the doctor maybe for 5 minutes. So I might only see the person maybe for less than 10 minutes, but I need to be at Cornell Health for maybe 1.5, almost close to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because Cornell Health provides so many services, so they need to deal with so many students at the same time. So that might be the reason why I need to wait. And I have another question, also not familiar with the U.S. system. So, for example, if someone knows they have issue with their heart or their kidneys, they cannot directly go to that specific clinic, right? They need to go to primary care and then get referral to that. So that might take 1.5 month to really take care of that symptom, right?
So I think we have to think about the context. So this is a relatively healthy young adult population. And I think primary care would be the first step, just like if you had a pediatrician or a doctor, out in town or locally. But once you get to campus, you kind of see us here at Cornell Health. So we have to do some things to what we call a workup to evaluate if you have a heart problem. Mm-hmm. We can do an EKG, we can do blood work, we can do a physical exam, but we can't get an echocardiogram. But we're not going to do that here. That's not, that's out of our scope. And it's expensive to go to a specialist. So for some countries that may have different type of payer systems, everybody gets care no matter what, and it doesn't cost anything. But the United States, it's expensive to see a specialist. And they're glad to take your money, not my money, for something, especially if something can be taken care of, diagnosed, treated within primary care, then sending somebody to a specialist is a lot of money for something to say, someone to say, yep, you're fine. But I understand I've had students from different parts of the world who getting a physical means a total body scan. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna do a body scan here. We're not gonna check every lab in the books because for young adult pop, you're healthy. There should be a reason why you're gonna get expensive tests. And I get that. But I think, and it just reminds me, I think that I've been talking about this with one of our leaders in our student health plan, LEVA, about health literacy. Mm-hmm. Not that you can't read, but it's just people come from all over the world and our medical system, our insurance system is very different than a lot of places. And sometimes you just need to know how things work. And I would love to have teaching courses, but workshops and stuff to expectations. In 2 weeks,
I mean, I don't know what kind of, you don't have to say what kind of appointment it was, but 2 weeks for like a physical is great. I gotta wait a year to see my doctor for my physical. I mean, I'm serious. So you get, it's yeah. pretty good. I'm just saying. And sometimes, and honestly, I don't know with the timing and stuff. I mean, we get really busy. We get complex students that are coming in and we get a 20-minute appointment. It's really actually should have been an hour. So when people get behind, I think a lot of us is just remembering, I need to pop in to tell me, hey, I moved right in. Just thank you for your patience. Because it does, this is a college campus, but we have a lot of complex kind of stuff coming through, whether it be mental health and physical health. And sometimes, you know, you get behind this, like, that's one of those days.
I will share in medical, in the primary care services, we see 18,000 students in a year. So it's a significant number of students who are coming in for care. And so I think just to put it in context, it's helpful to understand the navigation of all those things and scheduling and things like that. But
and we see everything, you know, mental health stuff.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, cut their hand and they're suturing stuff. So it's a lot of different stuff for one little bit. No, great building. It's not.
Yeah.
But thank you for
being here. Yeah.
And you can always like put a comment in. You know, every clinician has, every time we have a visit with a student in primary care, and I think in CAPS too, in mental health, I know you guys are probably bombarded with surveys and things like that, but it does ask you how your visit was, and it's anonymous. Nobody can identify, oh, that was so-and-so, he said that about me. But we use that feedback to help us, you know, serve students better and help us just kind of, you know, be the best clinicians we can be. And it's, we don't take it personally. Well, maybe sometimes, just kidding.
Oh, there's a couple comments on Zoom. Jessica, do we have any questions on Zoom?
There was one from Hannah, but she put her hand down.
I have a question. Yeah, so I'm curious what initiatives you guys are taking to make sure your providers and Cornell Health don't victim blame students and discourage them from reporting to Title IX, because that's incredibly dangerous for student safety on campus. Because if your provider didn't discourage me from reporting to Title IX, me and other students would not have been threatened, assaulted, and harmed. What initiatives are you taking to make sure that your providers do not break the law and discourage students from reporting violent threats to Title IX?
So students who come in and disclose information about sexual assault, bias, some form of violence, are given resources to our share office.
I was not given a full resource. I was discouraged. I was told that it was in my head and that I was at fault and I had not to report. I specifically asked to be connected to Title IX resources. I was assaulted.
Sorry, Elena, not to cut you off. I just want to give our guests the opportunity to respond. And then if we have time for follow-ups, I'd be happy to give you the time.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much. Sure. Please, Julie.
Yeah, so normally what we do is we actually share the different resources that exist, because not everyone wants to report. Sometimes getting connected to a victim advocate, which is a confidential resource, is a good way to start, because they can support people through the process. And so that's an option. Title IX is an option. And we also have Office of Spirituality and Meaning Making as an example, because it depends on the individuals and kind of what they would like. And with some of the chaplains or the folks in spirituality and meaning making, some of them are also confidential. So we try to provide different resources to students so that they can get connected.
Other questions for our speaker?
Yes, why did you ban me from medical care after I reported your provider?
I'd be happy to talk to you specifically. My email is julieedwards@cornell.edu. And I know that we've been in connection. And so happy to continue the conversation.
Right. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
All right. At this time, I'd like to give our guests a very big thank you for coming to visit us. It's so nice to hear about the work you're doing at Cornell Health. And for any additional questions, I'm happy to pass those along. And we're able to share your slides with the group.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
All right. At this time, before I forget again, I'm going to move back into the agenda towards the approval of the January 26th meeting minutes. I'll give 1 minute for review, and then I'll be entertaining any motions for approval.
Thank you guys. Have a good night. Thank you.
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve the minutes as they stand. Is there a second? Second from Katie. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the January 26th meeting minutes are approved.
Perfect.
At this time, we will now move into our first resolution today. And to do that, I will be ceding the chair per charter to the next available member of the executive board, which is Xander. Xander is now the chair.
The point of information for the purposes of the resolution process, what is the framework you will use in terms of points?
Okay, so first we will have Nick as the sponsor give a presentation, and then we will go to I believe pro con, where we alternate between pros and cons. Or no, we'll go first to questions for Nick, and then we will go to on debate if there is intention about it.
Nick, do you want me up there with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Be here, free.
All right. Hi everyone. Today I am joined by Jason and proposing Resolution 8, implementing special grant committee funding recommendations on proposals addressing the Big Red Barn. This is the first of a series of five resolutions that implement the recommendations from the special grant committee. Jason, as a brief overview, did you want to explain what special grants committee was?
Yeah, sure. So if you were here last meeting, you heard my spiel, but very briefly, about 10 people spent on it at least 20 hours of their time over the winter and even this year, going over 58 proposals that we received, ranking them, discussing them at length, and then providing recommendations for the GPSA to fund as per the Resolution 9 in fiscal year 2024, which is on the resolution in the packet or in the documents of the packet. What we decided was that we would split up the proposal or the grants into five categories. This is the Big Red Barn category, and that is that.
Right. So the contents of Resolution 8 addresses proposals number 22 and 29, which are on the box for your reference. Proposal number 22 includes the comprehensive plan to purchase new furniture for the Big Red Barn. That is 29. Proposal number 29 relating to referencing the Big Red Barn. As we all know, the Big Red Barn is a high demand and high use space on Cornell's campus. It hosts over 500 events annually, programming events, including its signature writing workshops, Salsa Nights, Trivia Night, and the very famous TGIF Telegraphs It's Friday. It's a hub for graduate students across the Cornell community. And despite its popularity, or as a result of its popularity, it has gotten a little bit old and worn and torn. Some of the furniture that's in the Big Red Barn has not been replaced since it was established as a graduate student center over 30 years ago. As you can imagine, as a result of the furniture being quite old, it is heavy, challenging to move, and it's difficult to transition the space between different activities, which directs staff time and attention away from programming towards rebuilding furniture that breaks. As a result of this, the barn has looked at replacing its main area, second floor, and greenhouse furniture for a total cost between $80,000 and $110,000 based on consultation with a business interior firm. The graduate school put together a very compelling proposal that the special grants committee reviewed and received support from, including a pledge of up to 40% of the cost, 40% of the cost of to replace the Big Red Barn furniture up to $40,000. The grant puts forward a collaborative and consultative plan with graduate students, including creating a graduate student advisory committee to solicit design ideas in-house at Cornell, including consultation with AAP faculty, design consulting at Cornell, and Design Connect, before finalizing and presenting a recommendation of the selected furniture for approval with the full GPSA. That's on proposal number 29. This would allocate $60,000 from the GPSA SC reserve account to the graduate school and the Big Red Barn more formally for the purchasing of that furniture. Grant number 22 is much less in amount at $1,200, and this would outline a one-time purchase of a new disco ball and lighting system to the Big Red Barn. This was submitted on account of very frequent requests from both event organizers and attendees that the lighting is not very flexible at the Big Red Barn, that fluorescent lighting is quite glaring and does not serve the many dance events that the barn throws each year and frankly each week. And so this would also be a big help. Altogether, this bill would put together $61,200 toward the Big Red Barn, the first installment of $1,200 this semester to fulfill grant number 22 pursuant to lighting, and the second installment of $60,000 at the time of procurement, which procurement of furniture, which per the proposal from the Big Red Barn would come, I believe, the summer of 2027. So this is not a instantaneous process, nor are we voting to approve selection of furniture today, but this is to earmark that money for this use and basically enter into agreement with the graduate school for how these monies will be used.
And as a reinforcement of that point, we as graduate and professional students will have an opportunity to serve on committees or opportunities to look at the furniture and make recommendations. It's not going to be, oh, do what you want. We'll have some say.
Yes. I also want to highlight two additional points in this presentation. The first is that there was an additional criteria put forward by the Special Grants Committee in their recommendation, which was one, that the graduate school must use all available opportunities to involve graduate and professional student input, which they articulated very well in their proposal, and we want to reiterate that commitment in this bill. And the second, which I apologize, but there was one additional criteria that was put on here that is in the box version, and that includes an item B under bullet one, and looking under B at further resolve, that the graduate school must make every available effort to preserve the charm and character of the Big Red Barn and its carriage house aesthetic. We're not buying like future furniture. Keeping the style, yes. I also wanna highlight one additional thing, and this is based on all bills that you'll be seeing today and in the future, which is all grants funded through these GPSA SC reserve monies should feature the supported by GPSA seal visibly in all promotional materials, advertisements, printed and digital, and that for each year of funding offered, a budget for planned activities must be submitted for review and approval by the GPSA Appropriations Committee in advance of disbursement, and that at the end of each year of funding, an impact and visibility report be compiled and submitted to the GPSA Appropriation Committee detailing the use of the funding, including any photo documentation of the event renovation installation and the feasibility of money spent for future years when applicable. I just wanted to highlight that. That will be a recurring sentiment throughout all of the Special Grant Committee recommendations. And with that, no further comments. I cede my time. Thank you.
Okay, questions for Nick and Jason? Arguments for or against this proposal?
No. Actually, quick question. Is there a timeline on, maybe you said it, but the timeline on the whole project? When will it, how long?
Yeah, so the timeline for the whole project, I'll start with the easy one, which is the 1200 for the lighting. That would be made to the Big Red Barn this spring semester so that they can probably start ordering and probably have something by the end of the spring, early summer. As far as the furniture, it would be in this spring, in the summer, to convene a committee, put that together into the fall, that to start actually doing the work of putting together a recommendation. Proposal 29, which is on the box, has the detailed schedule, but they would be finally hoping to purchase that furniture in summer of 2027. So we're still a little bit out, lots of time to discuss.
Yeah, just for everyone's information. So what you see here in the resolution is like kind of pared down, because otherwise we would have printed several books and killed many forests. So if you want like exact specifics of what each of these proposals is doing, go to the box. It's got everything. It's got more than you want, really.
Thank you, Kate.
Question from motion to move to the previous question.
And you can indeed. Are there any seconds? Okay. All right. So with that, I think this should be fine to do a hand vote. What? Yeah. Roll call vote. Yeah. Let's do that one. Jessica, are you ready to do a roll call vote on?
They're doing some discussion. So as a note, because we're moving monies, this is going to not require a majority, but hey,
from
yes. So this is just making sure that all the back end is going well.
Yeah.
So 2/3 is 20 more.
Oh, yeah. Yep, so that's what the roll call
about. So we're doing
Whenever you're ready, Jessica.
Layla El Shama, don't believe is here. Anna El Zayer, don't believe.
Do we want to do another roll call and then the roll call vote after?
I think we can just do it as we're going.
Okay.
It's just hard to look at all the screens. Vishwa Barua. B. Candelaria is not here. Monifer is not here. Paul Caruso.
Aye.
Cameron Chappell.
Aye.
Jason Tubergo.
Aye.
Alessandra Kugan.
Aye.
Isako Di Tomasi.
Aye.
Kelly Ellis.
Aye.
Devin Freeman.
Aye.
Emma Rose Gamlin.
Aye.
Great, thank you. Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Aye.
Irene Gattini.
Aye.
Malta Hoffler.
Aye.
Mackinac James, I don't believe is here. Yusuf Khalid.
Aye.
Claire King.
Aye.
Anurag Koyada.
Aye.
Dongyan Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye. Oh, sorry.
Clarice Ruffert.
Aye.
Tian Nguyen.
Aye.
Marilise Ortiz.
Aye.
Raina Prude.
Aye.
Katie Bourbon.
Aye.
Dean Sepp.
Aye.
Ian Smith.
Aye.
Yuping Wu.
Aye.
And Nick, there's no need for you to vote. It's very clearly 24-0-0. Resolution 8 passed.
Well, we'll say Nick voted and I didn't, since I was the chair.
Oh, that's true.
We passed it. All right, and now I'm going to pass it back to Nick.
All right.
I see the power.
Moving down the list, we'll now move into, actually, the question goes to Jason. Jason, would you like to present Resolution 9 independently, or Irene, you're also on Zoom?
Yes, Irene, if you are here and able, you are welcome to speak. Otherwise, I will take it from here.
I'm here, but they might take me away at any moment, so please do. I'll be here.
Fair enough.
So With that, we will now move into Resolution 9, Implementing Special Grants Committee Funding Recommendations on Proposals of the Jetson Symposia, sponsored by Irene, Jimmy, and Jason Chibirko. Irene and Jason, you have the floor.
Very good. Thank you. So, as mentioned previously, this is the second of five resolutions that we have. In particular, this is for grants that are generally associated with symposia, one-day events that are addressed in a more academic structure. So the first couple of whereas clauses are the same for all these proposals, so I will just skip over those for time. But one of the things I'll highlight starting on line 38 is the whereas clause that really builds the case as to, if you didn't already believe it, why symposia are an important component of graduate and professional student life here, which is providing graduate and professional students with structured spaces to present research, exchange interdisciplinary ideas, build scholarly and professional networks, and engage in collective learning that enhances their academic development, professional preparedness, and sense of intellectual community at Cornell University. And so following up off of the Special Grants Committee recommendations, this resolution therefore resolves in line 48 to earmark about $61,000 to be split for the proposals named, which in this case are grant 9, 32, 33, 36, 43, 46, 51, and 55. As mentioned, all of this information is present both starting in the be it further resolved clause on line 52 and in the box. But for the purposes of this resolution, I will highlight the first two with the remainder to follow. And so as mentioned, this ordering is going to be in descending order of cost. So the first proposal in this, or the first grant, is to be distributed to the Organization of Cornell Planners, grant number 51. And in this case, this is a three-year proposal for about $7,500 each year annually for a Planning Palooza event for the students there. And then, as stated, this is dependent on them showing us receipts and stating that this event was indeed successful for consecutive years of funding. They will not get all of the money for the first year. And then, again, to belabor the point, for number two on line 60, we're highlighting the Climate Advocacy Planning Committee. In this case, this is grant number 32. And this was really particularly interesting to the committee due to the purpose, which was to fund food for the Climate Advocacy Symposium. And again, this is a two-year event, so they will receive each year's funding separately. And what was really interesting about this committee or this proposal was that it brings together a number of disparate groups to advocate on behalf of improving the climate and awareness at Cornell, which, as we all are experiencing, is something I think worthwhile. In that case, all of the other recommendations are listed in that there as clause, and I am happy to take any questions about funding, all of them. Irene, do you have any statements before I actually cede my time?
No, that was great, Jason. Thank you.
All right. The sponsors have ceded their time. We'll now move into question and answer. Are there any questions for Jason or Irene? Eugene?
I have a general question about kind of the membership of these clubs. I mean, for context, like I do like try to stay involved. Right, the community. Like, I like to seek out like new clubs to join. I know what they will do. I'm just looking at the names. There are things like, you know, field of microbiology students and other groups. And I'm just wondering, is membership in these clubs like open to all graduate students, or is it just like for one specific field?
Mm-hmm.
Because I do personally feel like our funding would be better directed towards clubs that serve like a very broad grassroots community rather than just like a field or something. Yeah, so can you maybe speak more about that?
Yes, of course. So I do agree with your point specifically. I will note that any organization that is funded by the GPSA in part or in whole is required to have all of their events open to the graduate and professional community. And by no extension, that is also the same here for this fund. The aim of all of this funding is in many of these different groups of students to allow for community building and symposia that are available to the broader graduate professional community. While, as you highlighted for the field of microbiology students, they were the organization that put the proposal together, but the plan is for them to hold this symposia, in this case, the microbiology symposium, to be available to any and all students. While it may specifically address one concern or one symposia, that is part of a broader scope of improving the well-being of all graduate professional students at Cornell.
Okay.
Other questions for Joe? Cameron, please.
I think in that line, I think what you said just now confused me a bit. So you said that any like graduate student organization funded by us has to make its events open to all graduate students?
Yes.
But then I'm confused with like we're gonna read a resolution in a few minutes about like lounge furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So like how does that like serve the entire graduate student organization? And then I also have a second question, but I'll leave it.
Yeah. So I'll address at least the first point. We can discuss student lounges when we get to that. But the goal for all of these proposals is to broadly improve the well-being of all graduate professional students.
Gotcha.
You can't do that with any one proposal. All of these proposals as a combination allow our money to best improve the well-being of graduate professional students. It's a combination of what each proposal proposed and what the special grants committee recommended us fund.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I think I need to.
Yes. No, my apologies for the confusion.
Oh no, all good.
And other questions for Jason?
Yeah. I think a further like point of information question, I guess, just in general. So I know we like did a resolution recently funding Annabelle's Grocery because we promised to do so in the past and then we failed to do that. Is that like a issue that happens a lot? Because I know like with a lot of these proposals, we're like approving funding for like 2 or 3 years. Do we have mechanisms in place to like make sure that happens?
You didn't set a time limit.
Okay.
Yes. We didn't get that in expiry.
Yeah, and one of the things we didn't explicitly discuss, but is mentioned in this case in line 85, is that the Appropriations Committee will be in charge of managing a lot of the distribution and checking up on a lot of the organizations that we fund through these resolutions and as a consequence of the special grants process.
Okay.
And so we will have oversight in some capacity, especially. It's not you just get money and we have no way of doing it.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I think also like a further thing to add there is that Annabelle's situation happened over COVID. And so like this whole past couple of years has been rebuilding so that we no longer have to take COVID happening for every single thing that goes wrong.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Other questions?
There's two on Zoom.
Oh,
cool. Mary Lees is a member. Addie Lou is
Recognizing Mary
Lee. Hey, yeah, so I wanted to get just some clarity about why like certain organizations, like right, the Organization of Cornell Planners gets 3 years of funding, and then when it comes to other groups, let's say like African Graduate Students Association or like why it's just a single year. I guess like I wanted to get clarity on the differentiation.
Oh, sure. I'm happy to speak. So one of the things that I'll highlight is that each of the individual grants asks for different things. Some grants asked for multi-years of funding, some did not. So while some proposals requested additional funding, and that was either recommended by us or not, it also depends on how the proposal was ranked. So the Special Grants Committee, as I stated, spent dozens of hours poring over these grants and ranking them, discussing them, and recommending funding based on a number of criteria. And the results that you see here, which is present on the slide, is what the committee decided. And that is not entirely based on the lack of interest in having multi-year funding. Some grants did not ask for it, so.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Any last questions for Jason and Irene pursuant to Resolution 9?
Yeah, I also noticed that, for example, the Resolution 51, like this is only like some of those events only, like you only agreed to fund like partial, like not the full amount. For
Correct.
Example, that one wanted another amount of money for inviting actually external participants to the conference.
Mm.
So there's always, of course, the risk on, okay, cutting costs, not having that it decreases the effectiveness of the thing. Because like currently it looks like there's going to be a conference, you know, 2 days. And if like the, for like 100 people, 15 meant to be like from, not from Cornell, remaining 85, I assume I'm just at Cornell, because it looks like this, the club has like 88 members, so there's numbers fit. So we would just fund $22,000 for them to have breakfast, dinner, and lunch. It seems.
So to clarify, you're speaking on grant number 51, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So what I'll note is that one of the things that we did is, again, we ranked the proposals and we discussed them in depth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things of note is that while the individual applicants may highlight in their grants one thing or another, the goal is to address and improve well-being of all graduate professional students. That is, in many cases, not doable with any one proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And the committee, both A, felt that this application was well-written and also was worth recommending funding.
Yeah.
And so we did account for a number of criteria, whether they were on Cornell campus, not on Cornell campus, and that will come up in a couple other resolutions as well. Yeah.
Could I ask Jason maybe to clarify, what did we not fund in general, the committee? What did
So that's one of the things I'll highlight, is we did not generally or at all fund speaker honorarium, travel, or lodging. And so while you look through a number of the proposals, the things that we kept consistent were mainly speaking or staying around funding food and other venue reservations, mostly because that's A, what we do with GPSAFC, but it's not something that the committee deemed worthwhile of the funding. We could spread the money more broadly if we focused on funding food for events, for example.
And
also a point of clarification on this as well. Just because we aren't funding it doesn't mean somebody else can't. And so, like, a lot of the things that the committee chose not to fund are things that we viewed as kind of somebody else's responsibility. So, for example, paying for speakers, that's often something that departments do because it's good for departments to have, like, external academics come in. So we wanted to make sure that we weren't using graduate money to subsidize things that would be done anyways. Or that departments would see, oh, that's something we could totally pick up. And we are in conversation. We want to be in conversation with all of these organizations that we fund. So it's not, again, we're not handing anyone a blank check. We are saying, we've earmarked your money. Show us what you're going to spend it on. Show us you're going to actually put on an event, even if you didn't get the full amount. And then we'll give you the money.
If I may very quickly, specifically for grant number 51, this is an annual contribution for up to 3 years. It entirely depends on them showing us that they put on the event and reached the audience that both they promised and that they were capable of reaching. So it is fully within the rights of GPSA to say, oh, they, or in this case, the appropriations, to look at that and say, oh, they did a good job or they did not do a good job.
Paul?
Motion move into pro-con debate.
There's been a motion to move into pro-con debate. How many cycles?
Seconds?
Cycles.
What is a cycle? One.
Okay, yeah. So for everybody's reference, this is one of the first times we're doing pro-con debate in here. Okay. There's a motion for pro-con debate. You specify the number of cycles. A cycle is a con and a pro. I'll ask for a con speech. If anybody would like to give a con speech, they can raise their hand and be recognized, and then speak for as long as they'd like within the 2 minute time slot, or yield to someone else. At that time, if there is a con speech, then it goes to pro, and we do that for however many cycles. If there's no con speech, though, the debate's over. Right? So there's been a motion for pro-con debate. How many cycles?
One.
There's been a motion for one pro-con cycle. Do I have a second?
Wait.
I don't see. Second. All right. Is there any objection? Without objection, so we'll move into pro-con debate. I will ask, is there a con speech? This is the hard part. Going once on a con speech. Going twice on a con speech.
Once.
Seeing no cons, the floor is now closed and we'll move back into question and answer period. Paul?
Motion to move to the previous question.
And the motion to move to the previous question, a second from Andy. And with that, we will now move into a roll call vote on Resolution 9, Implementing Special Grant Committee Funding Recommendations on Proposal Addressing Symposia. Jessica, you may call the roll.
Okay. Layla Alshama is not here. Jana Alzair is not here. Vishwa Barua is not here. Mikanda Laria is not here. Anifer Amanda Cardenas is not here. Paul Caruso.
Aye.
Cameron Chappell?
Aye.
Jason Jaberka.
Aye.
Alessandra Hugan.
Aye.
Misako DiTomasi.
Aye.
Kelly Ellis. Devin Freeman. Emma Rose Gallant.
Aye.
I say aye.
Oh, thank you, Devin. I was an aye. Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Aye.
Irene Gattini.
Aye.
Thank you. Martha Haslow.
Aye.
Mike isn't here. Yusuf Khalid. Yusuf? Oh, what you said. Claire King.
Aye.
Anurag Koyada.
Aye.
Zongyan Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye.
Clarice Mefford.
Aye.
Tian Nguyen.
Aye.
Marilise Ortiz.
Aye.
Raina Prud.
Aye.
Katie Rohrbach.
Aye.
Dean Sepp.
Aye.
Ian Smith.
Aye.
Yu King Wu.
Aye.
Nick, are you in abstain? We are 22-0.
22 and 21 subtracted. Okay. No need.
22-0.
Sorry.
22-0-1.
I see. Thank you. In that case, the resolution 9, implementing special grant committee funding recommendations on proposal addressing symposia, passed. All right. All right. At this time, we'll now move to implementing special grant committee funding recommendations on grants addressing community building. Sponsor Xander. Anu. Why is it someone else's name? Sorry. Anu. Anu and Jason are recognized. Paul.
Believe the meeting must be extended. So motion to extend the meeting 30 minutes until 7 o'clock.
There's been a motion to extend the meeting until
all
7
right.
p.m. Like second.
Second.
Seconded by Ian. Is there any objection?
Yeah, I wanted to object.
Okay. Xander objected. Okay. Recognizing Xander.
I'd like to amend to 15 minutes because I think we're going to start losing our quorum here in a second.
Yeah, if you haven't already.
Do I have a second for 15 minutes? Seconded from Katie and Alessandro. Do I have any objection? Seeing none, the meeting is extended to 6:45 p.m. All right, and with that, the floor goes to Anu and Jason for resolution 10.
Gonna keep this quick. This is very similar to the last resolution. Only change that is a slightly different focus. In particular, we're getting funding, or we seek to get funding to organizations running community building. These are organizations that build community for their field, such as grants number 27 for public health, number 13 for the Sociology Graduate Student Association, and so forth. There's others for race and ethnicity-based organizations. We've been out for development ones with Manel Keenan Leadership Center. It's relatively self-explanatory. The same restrictions for the last grants, like these. But yeah, these are going to be more event-based as opposed to like lounges and so forth. Any big questions?
All right, thank you, Anu. In time, we'll now move into question and answer period. Are there any questions regarding Resolution 10? One sec. Oh, first call for any members, voting members. Well,
is that a part of information?
Yeah.
Are amendments Oh, allowed during the trade.
You can make an amendment at any point during the deliberation. Okay. Are there any questions from any voting members at this time? Seeing none, Leo.
Okay, I've got 2 points. First, I've tried this all the time, but the cure card doesn't work, so we cannot access. I at least can put up access the documents there. Secondly, so if you're assuming that there is a presumption that an organization is or an event is being funded by something else other than GPS, this GPSA, so how are you going to make sure that you're not being thought about like this presumption because you don't have any communication with the organization? Are we going to make sure that the proposed amount of funding is correct for that specific event?
So, if I may understand, the first point is most of the documents that are available are for voting members. They are on the box. That is something that's limited. We, as much as I would like to make it everywhere and throw the flyers off the rooftops, it is important that we don't disclose all the information on all the proposals to everyone. The second point is the grants that we received recommended or requested funding for their events. It was up for the special grants committee to determine whether A, that was reasonable, B, if the proposed events would benefit graduate professional students, and then C, how much money of those proposals to fund. And so what you see here is the result of that process, and we intend very much so to be in communication with every organization we fund at any step of the process. And we have been in communication with many of them, and in fact, all of them thus far.
Other questions regarding Resolution 10? Alessandra?
The question on just like the like all sentence, just English. On line 84, it says like for the purpose of like fund 6 professional workshops and monthly wellness activities, socials. Is that 6 total or is that 6 per?
Yeah, so. Yeah, so in that case, it is 6 professional workshops and monthly wellness activities, socials.
So that's a separate.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, cool.
And a follow-up question for things like emotional and mental health support events, who denotes like what is considered like an emotional support or mental health event? Like who would be the person to pass that judgment?
I mean, and is there any particular grant that you're referring to for that?
Line 105? Maybe, yeah, 105, 106.
I believe in their proposal, they outlined what was happening.
Okay.
Yes. And as a reminder, this is a summary. This is by no means giving everyone every piece of detail on all of the proposals. Each one is at least 5 pages long.
Other questions? We'll go Cameron and Paul. And then we'd like to.
I just had a question about grant 54. Specifically the line 73. I guess even more specifically funding childcare. And I'm looking at the actual grant application. It seems like that's lumped in with transportation for events. I guess my question is just could I get more information on why childcare was like included? Yeah, I guess if we're I guess that would improve the lives of graduate students with children.
That it basically is the claim that the grant makes.
Okay.
The goal is to allow individuals who may or may not be able to attend those events due to child care restrictions to give them that opportunity. At least that's how the Special Grants Committee reviewed that.
Okay.
All.
Motion to amend.
There's a motion to amend on the floor, Paul, please.
Just a clarity thing.
Sure.
It's the different categories have different names via what was on the original grant proposal and what's here.
Sure.
Just a strike from lines 72 and 73, May 2026 to May 2027, which that was just the name that the grant put for that category.
To be clear, that was, I've been in communication with them in particular, that is a phase 2, a specific block of funding that is designed to be ran from those dates. So it is clear, it is in the form of the resolution designed to clearly state those are the events with which they are receiving funding.
So, seeing as this is an amendment, does the sponsor take the amendment to strike from line 72 to 73, May 2026 to May 2027 as friendly?
Can we learn more about the amendment before we decide?
You want to, so it's not the.
Right.
I think it's not friendly. Paul, you have a minute to present. Yeah.
So the in the grant itself, it describes two phases, both of which have timestamps. But this is the only thing that is has a timestamp on the bill. So it would just be more consistent to, because we're still funding the same thing.
Right.
That we've given them things that they can't fund. And so they still can only use the money during, like, per their grant and what they said they were going to use it and the timestamp for it. But strangely, this is like the only category that has the, instead of the others, which also have dates associated with them. So it's just a consistency thing. Yeah.
We're friendly to this.
Yes. Okay.
You're friendly. All right. Yeah. Is there any objection regarding Paul's amendment to strike from 72 to 73, the date May 2026 to May 2027? Any objection? Going once, going twice. Seeing no objection, the resolution 10 is amended as such. All right, going back to question and answer, Ian?
Wait, so if I want to look and ask another question,
you can,
I have
to. Oh.
Yeah, I'll do it, then you.
All right. Yes. Oh, and can you both please state your name for the record?
Hi, Vessel. I'm part of the Iranian graduate student. First of all, thank you for going through the process of choosing the grants and everything. I was here in the last meeting and I heard the process of this reiteration of the blending and then destiny. But I understand it took a very long time. Thank you. But I specifically reached out to Anu after the meeting and I asked about a little bit of a more clarification of the funding and why the amount that was recommended for our organization was extremely lower than the amount that we asked. And the response I got, and of course, please correct me if I'm confused, was that it's because we probably can't get that amount from other sources of funding. I wanted to clarify that we cannot do that this year. We thought GPSA funding for our organization was reduced this year, and the only other source of funding that we have is the ISA organization, and the funding that have also reduced by $2,000. So with all that going on, I think that's what my friend here was also trying to say, is that you assume that we have other sources of funding, but since we did not receive any kind of communication from the special grant and we're not contacted.
By you should have. There was an email that was sent out.
But,
and my apologies.
Thank you. There was one email 2 weeks ago after, like before, a few hours before the GPSA meeting, the recommendation, and reached out after. And my friend here, he's the treasurer of the Iranian Registry, reached out last week, requested for a separate meeting to have a little bit more clarification. We didn't receive responses, or not, like no one agreed to talk with us, so that's why we're here again.
Thank you. The response is Anu. Would you like to respond, Anu, Joseph?
Yeah, I believe for the most recent emails that you sent, Nick, I believe, did reply setting up, or I believe Nick replied.
So to clarify, communication was given and all issues were to be addressed to Nick. While we understand that your individual organization would like more funding, we had many difficult decisions to make and gave funding as we deemed able. We wanted to best improve the well-being of graduate professional students, and in that case, providing $2,000 was what the committee recommended.
Thank you. I think that's why we kind of asked for the scoring and how we got scored on our proposal, because we actually have zero idea of how our proposal was assessed.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're trying to have.
Yeah. And to be fair, it is not a requirement for individual applicants to know how the score occurred. We are here to describe the process, but it was over 20 hours per person on this whole process that would take way longer than we would want. We're happy to chat with you in general, but the recommendation is what the recommendation is.
So can we reach out
after?
Yes. Just for purposes of time, are there any other questions?
Basically, one question is also like, if we approve it now, how long does it take for the people to get the money, because like the NOFOS thing, for example, even if it's scaled down and still happening, would be like March 20. The the one Jewish organization that like would be the first week of April, would they still be getting the money by that time?
Mm.
If
otherwise,
we can,
they would have to wait a year.
Of course, if I may allow Sean to respond.
Thank you. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
As you see, the costs are really different. There's renovations, there's chairs, everything you can imagine, diapers to big catering costs. It's going to take some time. But the one that can submit their cost to campus groups should be pretty fast.
Yes. And to clarify, as long as you have a student organization on campus groups, that is what seems referring to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question behind me.
I'll ask just for members and then are there any other questions from GPSA members, voting members at this time? Or you may yield also.
Okay. I can ask a question because I already know like we're still over time. But I have a question really quick. Just for a point of clarification, so I understand. For the community building, like for folks that for organizations that are going to be holding events for that portion of the grant, like different categories. When we say it's gonna take time, do you mean like the money's not like I know like when we register we have like a set budget, right? So like when I submit receipts for an event, it's like it costs like $3,500. Is it gonna that money gonna be added into that calculation or is it like per event? Do you know what the process looks like? We can also say
I'm not sure if I understand your question in the best way, but I think it's going to be pretty complicated. The more complicated your application was, like if you have a simple event, you know, if you rent the venue, you have some booth costs, I think then you can just submit it to campus groups and the funds are going to be on your campus groups and then you need to get reimbursed from there.
Okay.
If you have like a $20,000 event, like it's
not
going to be that fast. There might be a lot of work around.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not
going to
be like there,
it's going into the money that's ready to go. It's more like payroll.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Jason Nana? Going once, going twice, and we'll move into commenting period or standards
recognized. I was going to move them.
Okay. There's a motion to move to the previous question. I have a second conclusion. All right, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, Jessica, you may call the roll. Thank you.
Nobody is George, so I'm going to skip the ones that I'm not here. Paul Caruso?
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
Jason Chiburco?
Aye.
Alessandra Coogan?
Aye.
Isako Di Tomasi?
Aye.
Devin Freeman?
Aye.
Thank you. Emma Rose Gallant?
Aye.
Andy Garcia Ortiz?
Aye.
Irene Lula. Let me make sure. Alza Pasco?
Aye.
Kier Yusuf Khalid?
Aye.
Thank you. Claire King. Oh, Claire. Anurag Koyada.
Aye.
Sonia Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye.
Therese Mappert.
Aye.
Tian Nguyen.
Aye.
Thank you. Marilise Ortiz. Oh, I think Marilise left. Raina Prude.
Aye.
Katie Varba.
Aye.
Dean Sepp.
Aye.
Ian Smith.
Aye.
Yu King Wu.
Aye.
We have, I'm just making sure I didn't miss anyone. We have 20 votes, so
So, Nick, you should weigh in.
All right, casting the tie-breaking vote in the affirmative, resolution 10 passes. All right.
21-0-0.
All right, Xander's recognized.
Okay. I'm going to motion for the other two resolutions here to be tabled to the next meeting as we are out of time this moment.
That's true. There's a second.
Second.
Second from Andy. Is there any objection? Without objection, resolutions 11 and 12 are tabled. All right. There's no new business. We're in open forum. Are there any votes?
Sorry.
We're in open forum.
Yeah, and I motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
A motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. A second from Andy. Is there any objection? There's no objection. The meeting ending time is 6:50 p.m. Anybody need business to open forum?
Yep, I do.
Yeah.
So first of all, I want to say thank you, especially to the Special Grant Committee, for the amount of work we had to put in to review all of the grants. It's a huge amount of work. But second of all, I wanted a clarification, especially as it relates to the partial funding, right? So I'm the president of Africa, and we have requested for a certain amount of fund, but we did realize that the amount that was funded, the committee also recommended that it should be used for specific. So we do understand that for now we have independent organizations, independent organizations. For us, we're not affiliated with our department, which means we cannot get any department to fund our campaign speakers, honorarium, or stuff like that. In that kind of situation, it means we can have funding for food, but there is no speaker. So for a symposium to hold without a speaker, it's not going to hold in the long run. So if we're not getting full funding, I think one thing we can, the committee can recommend is not to let us be capped to a specific thing or recommended to have a specific item to get. So even if we want to water down or reduce the amount of people, just to ensure we have a program to host, at least we should be able to walk around whatever funding we have if the committee is saying they cannot improve funding for it. So that's just what I wanted to clarify. There's something that can be done regarding that.
Thank you. Other points for open forum? Going one.
Just a reminder, Kappa is visiting next week.
Correct.
Whatnot out there.
Right. Any points for discussion or motions at this time? Xander?
Motion to end the meeting.
Motions to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ian. Is there any objection? No objection. The assembly is dismissed.
So you are in email contact with them.
Yeah, good work.
You're in email contact with them.